Gabe Kapler joins us on Sports Byline, outfielder who played portions of 13 seasons with six major league teams. He started his managing career with Philadelphia and now is the manager of the San Francisco Giants. Gabe was born in Hollywood, and his father, Michael, a classical pianist who wrote music and also taught piano, his mother, Judy, an early childhood educator originally from Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, and they met while working in the anti-war movement in the 1960s, and then they moved to California in the 1970s. With that type of background, Gabe, I would think that there were some probably pretty interesting conversations in the Kapler household.
Well, you've clearly done your research. I can't speak specifically to the timeline, but certainly there were awesome discussions and sometimes very heated ones. And interesting household to grow up in. And I learned a lot from my mom and dad. I appreciate you having all that background.
Well, you know, when I read that, I thought to myself, because I remember as a young reporter back in Washington, D.C., I had the honor of standing on the Lincoln Memorial 10 feet away from Martin Luther King when he gave the I Have a Dream speech. And I know how touching it was to me. So I thought about your parents. How did that really color the way you look at life and people, Gabe?
Yeah, I think the civil rights movement was one that was very important to my mother and father. Both of them were heavily invested in equality, invested in the value of diverse thought, but also background, socioeconomic background, and just bringing together as many different types of people with different opinions as possible to help shape and form our own opinions and views on life. And so I think growing up in a house like that taught me how to respect the opinions and backgrounds of others.
At the age of 8, you had a very traumatic experience. You were hit by a car, and you needed to have therapy to overcome your fear of crossing streets. I can imagine how traumatic that must have been. What got you through that, Gabe?
Yeah, I mean, I think at 8 years old and in third grade, I was riding a school bus and walking from a bus stop in a very busy area in Southern California to my house. And at that time, I was coming home to an empty house. Both of my parents worked at schools, and so they were done after 5 o'clock p.m. There was after school programs, and so I was very young and experiencing life in a way that I don't think kids that age experience it nowadays. And like you mentioned, did get hit by a car crossing a really major intersection, and so there was definitely some fear of crossing the street up until the time I was 11 or 12 years old after that. And rightfully so, right? Like, those cars were moving pretty fast, and I had an experience by myself that led me to kind of have, some of that fear that you mentioned. So it's an important coming of age time. I think the most traumatic part of all of it was at the beginning of a little league baseball season. And so I wasn't able to start on time. I had a couple of cracked ribs, and I remember being on the couch in my living room in Southern California, and I think the way my parents helped me get through that was by getting me a very small mutt terrier mix, and so that dog was helpful in getting me through that very difficult time.
I know you grew up in San Fernando in the valley there, and you were the smallest player on your little league team. That can be intimidating for a youngster as well. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, I was a late bloomer for sure. I don't think I really, you know, started to grow and grow past a lot of my peers until, you know, I was 16 or 17 years old. So, yeah, I think I always had the ability to put the fat part of the bat on the ball, and good eye-hand coordination, and I was a practicer. So I'd spent a lot of time, working with sticks and wiffle ball bats and tennis balls and taped up sock balls that my brother and I would play with. And so I had some pretty good technical ability, the ability to find the barrel of the bat, but nothing happened when I did make, you know, square solid contact. The magic didn't start happening until I was bigger, stronger, and able to put that to good use by beating the outfielders when I did square up the ball. So your point is right. I think early on I was on the smaller side, and there were times when I was one of the smaller kids on each of those like little league teams from, I don't know, age 8 to 12.
And if the information is correct, you were a late bloomer because in your four seasons of high school baseball, you never hit a home run.
That's right. I never hit the ball out of the ballpark. Now, at Taft High School in Woodland Hills, California, in left field, there were no fences, which was the only chance that I would ever have to hit a home run. So, you know, you could hit the ball out to the opposite field and it would go over a shorter fence, but I didn't have that kind of power. So, yeah, I never hit a homer in my high school career. And then when I was in junior college, I started to really get bigger and stronger, and that's when the ball started sailing out of the ballpark for me.
Gabe, you were a 57th round draft pick. That means 1,486 players were picked before you when you were taken by the Tigers in the 1995 Major League Baseball draft. Think about that for just a second. What were your thoughts about that?
It makes me realize how boring it must have been to sit through that draft with that many draft picks. I think all of us have been on mock drafts, even like fantasy football. And when it gets into round, you know, 2, 3, 4, you're like, all right, when is this draft going to be over? I can only imagine what it's like for people to sit through 57 rounds. I didn't even know I was drafted until a few days after the draft. I was at a scout league game, and a scout league game at the time was, you know, some of the major league teams had put together like traveling teams that had players that the scouts wanted to follow. And I was on one of those teams. We were playing at UCSB, and I hit a ball out of the ballpark with a wood bat. The scout of the Tigers at the time said, "So like, what's your plan? Are you going to sign?" And I said, "I didn't even know I was drafted." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, nobody called me to let me know that I was drafted. So it was, I kind of viewed myself as an afterthought. But I was also naive enough that I thought once I got into professional baseball, I'd be on even footing with the bonus babies and the higher round draft picks. And that naivete was actually really good for me because I never felt like I didn't have a shot to get to the big leagues.
In 1999, you hit your first career home run on April the 30th, and your 10 home runs in the first 64 games, Gabe. That was the fastest by a Tiger rookie since 1954. What was the aha moment for you as far as when you said, you know, I can play this game at this level?
I think my aha moment was actually the year before in Double A. I'd had a really good minor league career up until that point. So in A ball, I had success at two levels, at low A, in the South Atlantic League, I'd hit 27 homers and drove in nearly 100 runs. So had some good performance there. Then had equally good performance the next year in the Florida State League. But then in Double A, I really had a breakout year as the minor league player of the year for Sporting News, and had a really tremendous experience. And at that point, I felt like I was just better than a lot of the players at that level and felt like I could compete at the major league level. I felt like I belonged pretty much right away in the major leagues, but I was always looking over my shoulder. I always had a chip on my shoulder and never felt, you know, 100% secure. And I think that drove me to work hard and give the game everything I had at every moment.
You got the nickname of the Hebrew Hammer. Of course, you are Jewish. And I'm just wondering, they label people for different reasons and they have different nicknames in professional sports and particularly in baseball. Were you comfortable with that right away? Because it would bring you a lot of attention. Other Jewish players, just a handful of them, they have told me along the way in their careers, it was something they really enjoyed, but sometimes it could be overwhelming. How did you look upon it?
Yeah, so I'm very proud of my Jewish heritage, very proud of my culture, my family's culture, my history, and the bloodline. So, you know, being given that responsibility, I didn't take it lightly. Now, I'm not religious, and so, you know, from a practicing the religion standpoint, it was kind of tough because I think that people just assume that you do practice religion, and it just wasn't something that I felt was authentic about me. So I wrestled with that a little bit. And at the same time, I understood how powerful it was to be a role model to young Jewish kids. kids around the world. And I took that responsibility very seriously. As far as the Hebrew Hammer nickname, that nickname has been given out to many, many different Jewish players. I certainly never felt it to be mine. And like dating back to Hank Greenberg and even forward to guys like Ryan Braun and Kevin Pillar, I think those guys have actually gotten similar nicknames. So I never really took ownership of it or believed it to be mine.
Gabe Kapler is with us on Sports Byline, outfielder who played portions of 13 seasons with six major league teams. He started his managing career with Philadelphia and now is the manager of the San Francisco Giants. We continue with more of you and America's sports talk show, Sports Byline. After you playing in Detroit, you moved on to the Boston Red Sox, and there is where you won a World Series in 2004 when the Red Sox swept the Cardinals. And St. Louis had a great season. They won 105 games. You all were a wild card team. And it was a very interesting World Series, I thought, as I think back on it now. What was the turning point in that World Series, in your opinion, Gabe?
No, I don't think there was a turning point. I thought we had control of the series pretty early on. I think in a lot of ways, I think for people in Boston, for our team, there were moments in the American League Championship Series in 2004 that trumped anything that happened in the 04 World Series. Now, I don't think that we swept the Cardinals, but I think a lot of that had to do with just the momentum that we had coming off of that ALCS. So while winning the World Series was everything and maybe the most important moment in Red Sox history, I think that the ALCS that year was, to everyone, the pinnacle of that postseason.
What was interesting is you had some great pitching, certainly with Curt Schilling, Pedro Martinez, Manny Ramirez was the MVP of that World Series. And I got to share a story with you. I was hosting a dinner for Bill Walsh, Carmen Policy, Dusty Baker, Joe Morgan, and Tony La Russa. We were having it in San Francisco, and it was just a casual thing. I always like getting together with those guys. And a couple walked by, and they stopped after they saw Tony, and they said, "We're from Boston." And he said, "We really think you're the best manager in baseball." And Tony looked up, and he said, "That's easy for you to say. You just swept us in four games."
And that's awesome. Tony has always had such a great sense of humor. I think it's wonderful that he was able to call on that in that moment. And, you know, he's just such a humble guy and super smart. And I might have agreed that he was one of the best managers in baseball at that time.
There is a story, and confirm it if you will, while playing for Boston, when Sean Green of the Dodgers announced that he would not play on Yom Kippur, the Boston media asked you if you would do the same thing, and you called a Boston area rabbi for advice with the curse of Bambino still hanging over the Red Sox fans' head. What did that rabbi tell you?
I don't even know. Oh, man. Well, I wish I could give you more information about that.
Yeah, I've got the quote here. It says, "Do it. We need all the help we can get." And you decided to play.
Ah, that's funny. I think those are always cute stories of a little bit of the game telephone in there, but certainly, I think, you know, part of what makes history a lot of fun is to go back and remember some of those moments where an anecdote was formed and shared, and try to remember it yourself. Sometimes it takes some work to do so, but it's always worth it.
One of the things I'm sure that meant a lot to you is that you had become a pinch runner in that game, and Terry Francona decided to leave you in the game, and you played out the rest of the game. And you were one of nine players who were on the field when the Red Sox won their first title in 86 years. I think about that, and I just kind of shake my head a little bit. That must have been a very revealing and wonderful moment for you and the team.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think the thing that stands out to me is running in from right field after the last out was recorded. And as you know, it was a ground ball back to Keith Falk, who flipped the ball to Doug Minkiewicz. And then the celebration ensued. It was just a surreal moment moving towards that dog pile around the mound. It was hard to believe that it was actually happening, so much so that I couldn't tell if I was in a movie or I was actually running in. It's sort of out-of-body experience. And then jumping on the dog pile and celebrating with with my teammates was one of the most incredible memories of my life. And extending that out, I think the most important memory of my life is after all the celebration was done and everybody had kind of started to calm down, I took my two sons, who at the time were very young, I mean, both of them under 5 years old, out onto the Busch Stadium mound, and nobody else was in the stadium. It was nearly dark. There were some lights on in the stadium, but the two of them were just kind of playing in the dirt on the mound, and I was out there with them with a champagne-soaked T-shirt and hat, and that bonding experience between the three of us is the most important memory of my life.
I know less than a month after that dramatic win in the World Series, you made a decision that was important as well. You decided to go over to Japan and play. And from what I heard, it was motivated partially by a memory of an elementary school report. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so I was fairly fascinated with Japan when I was a child. And, you know, just all of the things that you associate with Japan, like the subways, the public transportation, the street food, the history of the country, including things like samurais. And as a kid, like you think about ninjas and where ninjas originated and whether it was in, you know, China or Japan, Okinawa, a different part of Asia, you just kind of associate that I associated with Japan. And so I wanted to experience the culture and the history of the country at least as much as I wanted to go play baseball. So that was an itch that I felt like I had to scratch, and got over to Japan and had an incredible experience culturally. On the baseball side, not so much. It was one of the worst stretches of performance in like 6 weeks, 8 weeks that I've had on a baseball field. But I'll never forget the cultural experience. I was treated so well and enjoyed my experience so much.
What is the Japanese approach to playing baseball, or what was it when you were over there playing?
It is very fundamentally sound. Practice was really important culturally, and multiple reps. Like one of the things that Japanese baseball players and coaches and the industry is famous for is bullpen sessions for pitchers that are much longer than ours, and ground ball sessions for infielders that are much more labor intensive than ours. And so I think they pride themselves on meticulous and detailed practice, and also just the volume is important to them. They want to build their players up to be ready for the rigors of a major league season in Japan. So I think that's the thing that stands out most to me right now.
Gabe, take me through the vetting and the interest analysis on your part about taking the Giants job.
Sure. First, I had a strong history and working relationship with Farhan Zaidi, the president of baseball ops for the Giants. I'd worked with him and for him with the Los Angeles Dodgers for several years as the farm director, the director of player development, while he was the general manager of the club with the Dodgers. So I knew what his standards were, I knew what he stood for, and I knew how hard he worked and his style in putting together a baseball team. And so I certainly was excited about working with Farhan. I'm from Southern California, but I have a long relationship with the city of San Francisco. In fact, when I would visit the city with the other clubs, like the Texas Rangers when I played in the American League West and came to play the A's, or the Colorado Rockies when I came to play the San Francisco Giants or the Brewers, I always loved the city, the culture, the layout, the restaurants and the views, the bridges, everything that the city had to offer. I really fell in love with the city. So I knew that culturally I liked the fit. I knew that I appreciated what the city stood for. We circling back to the beginning of our conversation when we discussed my upbringing, I think the city stands for a lot of the things that are important to me personally, like equality and diversity. So it just felt like a good fit from just about every angle. Baseball, the person that I'd be working most closely with, the city itself, and proximity to my sons in Southern California.
It certainly is a learning experience when you go into managing and you have your first major league managing opportunity with Philadelphia. It didn't work out there. What did you take away from that experience that you'll now use with the Giants and going forward?
Yeah, that's an interview all to itself. I think we could fill hours with what I learned in Philadelphia. I think maybe the most important lesson I learned is the game cannot be played on paper, right? I'm big on strategic advantages. I'm big on using information to make high-quality decisions on behalf of a club. But I think what I learned in Philadelphia is that emotion is so important, and the way that players' confidence levels is so important. And sometimes when you take away a little confidence from a player by making the best strategic decision for the club in the long run, you have a net loss. And so I think one of the biggest takeaways was you really carefully examining every strategic advantage, and is it worth potentially robbing some confidence from a player? And I think the calculus or my takeaway right now is that oftentimes that strategic advantage that you see on paper isn't worth that confidence loss from a player.
How did you evaluate Bruce Bochy, a great manager, Hall of Fame manager, and following in his footsteps? Because I've known some great coaches in all sports or managers in all sports that had to follow some great names. And it was with trepidation that some of them did that. But how did you approach it?
I guess I'll approach it, and I could never fill the shoes of Bruce Bochy, and I would never try. We're very different personality types, very different managerial styles. I have a tremendous amount of respect for the things Boch has accomplished in the game. He's done so many great things for the city of San Francisco. Highest level of respect for him as a man, but I think I have to be Gabe Kapler and have to be authentic. And, you know, that means, you know, kind of carving my own path and in the city of San Francisco, doing it with a great supporting cast of coaches, and not really trying to be in anything like Boch. He's in a class all by himself and deserves to be.
When you take a look at baseball today and how it's changing and the players themselves, what do you note as the most important thing? Is it communication with them? Is it letting them know where they stand? They always say about what's my role model and everything. What does that look like today in baseball, Gabe?
I don't think there's the most important thing. I don't think it works like that. You know, among like thousands of variables, one thing that stands out to me is probably being direct, open, and honest with players. One thing that I've heard over the years as the farm director, the manager of the Phillies, and now as the manager of the Giants is that players don't always love to be told the truth, but they appreciate it. So in the moment, it might not feel good to them, but they circle back and say, you know what, I didn't love hearing that bad news or that I maybe had lost some playing time or that, you know, I was going to be sent down or that, you know, somebody else was going to pinch hit for me. But the direct, honest approach and giving them the opportunity to digest and absorb that information has historically been appreciated by players. And I think that's the move, honestly.
And when you think back on the managers that you played for over your career, who are the ones that stood out and what was it that they did that made them memorable to you?
Terry Francona stands out as a guy who was even and always there for his players and never seemed to, you never felt punished by poor performance with Tito. Joe Madden was equally important. He was creative and innovative and very accepting, had the ability to instill confidence. Johnny Oates was my manager in Texas in 2000. He's one of the warmer and more genuine human beings I've been around in baseball. I can think back to some of my minor league managers and how impactful they were. And Dwight Lowry was one of my minor league managers for the Fayetteville Generals in 1996, and he had as much impact on me as anybody else He led by example. He wasn't a rah-rah guy. He wasn't, you know, holding multiple meetings. But you knew when he talked, he meant business, and you knew that he cared for you. So I think, you know, any manager that you talk to will say that they are a product of all the different leaders that they've been around. And I think the most important leader that I've ever been around is my dad. He's the most influential leader in my life, and I take most of my cues from him.
Gabe Kapler with us on Sports Byline. Again, outfielder who played portions of 13 seasons with 6 major league teams. And he started his managing career in Philadelphia. It didn't work out there, but now he is the manager of the San Francisco Giants. We continue with more of you and America's sports talk show, Sports Byline.